It's a red card, 100% a red card. Haaland's about to knock it round him, and as we see here, he sweeps the ball away. Look, Haaland is about to knock it
round. It's a red card.
It's a red card. How can he get this wrong?
No, it's no debate. It's a red card. It's outside.
Just get rid of VAR.
You've had enough.
No, now at half time. No,
I think they've made a mistake, so now they're trying to cover up for the mate out there. It's a red card. Yeah. Everyone can see it's a red card.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graeme Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
Yes, and listeners, of course, you'll know that Terry DeFellin's not with us this week because he's been telling us for weeks that he's going on holiday. He's up in the Orkneys. Yes, he couldn't wait to the end of the season. He's gone on holiday already, but he will be back next week for our last episode of the regular season. Last episode of the season, Jan. It's come around quick, isn't it?
It does. It flies over, doesn't it? It's all lovely in August, time when it all kicks off and watching football in the sun. Next thing you know, it's Christmas, and then that's it. Easter, bang, done. It really does come round quick.
But, of course, the good thing is now is we are watching football in the sun again. And this is the great time of year because, obviously, we've had games where we've had a lot of skin in the game, haven't we? Where we've had a lot of interest. No more than this weekend with the FA Cup final. Well, I say no more. Obviously, Jan's team, Sunderland, had an extremely important game last Tuesday, which we talked about on the pod last week, and we will definitely talk about that. We're going to talk about that at length with Jan because, obviously, he cares about that more than the game that we're actually booked in to talk about. Now, of course, it seems a bit weird discussing the FA Cup final. The FA Cup final that Crystal Palace won, their first major trophy. It seems a bit weird to not have Terry here to discuss this. But I think it's quite good, Jan. I think it's quite good that he's not here. Because I think now we can just sit and talk for the next half hour about what a bunch of dirty cheats Crystal Palace are. And they are, aren't they?
Absolutely. They should get all of their medals and their pots and pans and chuck them in the bin because they won them by cheating.
Yes.
As the saying goes, yeah.
Yes.
What an awful way to win a cup final. Dirtiest cup final there ever was.
Oh, I don't know what to believe in anymore, really. I just thought, is this what football is now?
Game's gone, some would say, Grim.
Some would say. I finally get the meaning of that now, Jan. Yeah. People have just bandied that round like a cliche over the last few years, and then suddenly it hits you and say, well, maybe it has gone. Maybe it has gone. If VAR can't save us, who will, Jan?
Well, exactly. Obviously, you may well think, sometimes you're a very difficult man to read, Grim. You may well think that they're dirty. and they won it by cheating. I mean, I absolutely love Cup Final Day. I really do. It's got a real special place in my heart for a number of reasons, which I won't bore the listeners with. But just mainly because it's always sunny on Cup Final Day, and it's the Cup Final, and I still get excited. I don't understand why kids' TV isn't saturated with it these days on a Saturday morning. But there you go. I get up every year and check. I thought it was a brilliant game. Proper fairy tale stuff. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and yeah, I was a little bit moved towards the end, if I'm honest with you, because I live in the Crystal Palace catchment area. A lot of my friends support Palace, obviously Terry as well. Just to see them get there after it was 122 years to finally win something,
which is
amazing. They deserved the win, and it was a thoroughly entertaining spectacle. Definitely one for the ages.
It was memorable. It was so memorable, that game. It is going to be one that is going to be talked about for years. And actually for the right reasons, I think, as well, rather than people just moaning on about decisions. It had everything. It was full of incident. I think for me, it really reminded me afterwards, when I was thinking back about it, it kind of reminded me of 88 when Wimbledon beat Liverpool. It had that sort of vibe to it.
Mm.
That was late stage Liverpool. They were still winning league titles. They'd won the league by 9 points that year, and they would go on to win a couple more league titles. But then nothing. Then they hit their trough. And then Wimbledon, obviously, with the penalty save as well.
Yes.
So it had that sort of vibe for me. It wasn't just about a plucky side getting one goal and then hanging on. It wasn't that kind of final, even though in a more accurate way, it was. Because it had the penalty, it had the disallowed goal, it had the goalkeeper that should have been sent off, and then turning into one of the most insanely brilliant goalkeeping displays you'll ever see in a cup final. If someone says to me, what's your favourite bit at the cup final? Probably people losing their shit that Hendo wasn't sent off. But Eze's goal is amazing as well. And he scores amazing goals. But if you're going to win a cup final, that's a winning goal, isn't it? But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I've lived most of my life in the Palace catchment area. Most of the people I know are Palace fans when I was growing up. And I know a friend of mine was at Wembley and he texted me later on in the day and he says, I'm surrounded by middle-aged men crying. That kind of mood. So I am actually chuffed to bits for all the Palace fans that I know. But you've got to keep them down, yeah? And you can't let them have too much. You've got to remind them how they got there, the fact that they had to become evil, like all the rest of us who win stuff, fundamentally evil, and that's the price you have to pay. And Palace have paid that price, and now they have their glittering prize. They've got something to put in that trophy cabinet that I took a picture of earlier on this year, which was quite sad, I'd have to say. But now they've got something to put in there.
Yeah, they've got the trophy to put in there. Yeah, I'd agree with all of your sentiments there. I think the only difference to the Liverpool-Wimbledon final is that I thought that Palace, yes, they did hang on for the win, but at the same time, it felt like they did enough to deserve it. The goal, Eze's finish was excellent. Munoz, who got the assist, has been doing that all season. He's an incredible player, and hopefully Palace can hold on to him. But it was just a wonderful, flowing, counter-attacking move when City were up the other end, and they got caught. And Palace, you know, did a few waves of attacks like that, one of which they did score from, but it was ruled off, though. But yes, I concur. The best bit of it was all the right people losing their minds because it wasn't going the way it was supposed to go. And they had their opportunity there, didn't they, to have it go back to the way it should be, the way it always is, the biggest team wins. And VAR stepped in to get it right for us because that's what it's here for, because no one can get things wrong anymore. And VAR got it spot on. And I genuinely mean that. I don't think he should have been sent off. I think he maybe warranted a warning because he handled the ball outside of his area, but it wasn't a clear goal-scoring opportunity. And I did hear some people on the radio this morning going on about, well, it's Haaland though, isn't it? Haaland can score from any angle. And so so we've got the rule about he wasn't heading towards goal, it wasn't a clear opportunity to score. And then you've got a sub-clause for if it's Haaland. That's just bullshit, man. I didn't buy that at all. I thought they made the right call, and it was a really brave call to make, you know, on the biggest stage. So yeah, I think, you know, well done to the many referees that had input into that that one decision.
Yeah, I didn't really hear what the breakdown was of the decision. So I guess that the on-field decision was given as a free kick, and then it was VAR looking at it to see whether or not it was a denial of a clear goal-scoring opportunity. Now, I know that handling outside the area is no longer a nailed-on red card. It was. It used to be, didn't it? They softened it for accidental handball outside the area. But this is not accidental. This is just maybe a matter of geography, isn't it, really? Not knowing where you are. It's the excitement of the day, Ian. The excitement of the day. No one wants red cards in a cup final, do they? Frankly, City fans, you shouldn't have to rely on a Palace goalkeeper to be sent off to win your game. And you're right, they had every opportunity to win that game and they didn't take it. Yeah, you can lose your mind over the incident, but they had plenty of opportunities to turn that around, including the penalty. Now, of course, if Haaland is so great, then why didn't he take the penalty, eh? Eh? Answer me that, Jan.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because he's come back from an injury. He's out for quite a while. And of course, he was around and playing when City went through that awful spell. Did his confidence suffer? He's got this big eight-year contract hanging around his neck. They haven't really achieved anything this season, apart from the Charity Shield.
Oh, which, of course. Yes.
Which Guardiola responded to a journalist saying, well, how does it feel like having a trophyless season? And he was quick to point out that he won the Charity Shield. So that's everyone put back in their place on that particular one. I'm just wondering, well, we don't know what went through his mind. And to be honest with you, he'd be forgiven for going, I'm not in the right headspace to take this. So actually, potentially, he made a real brave decision deciding not to take it. We don't know what would have happened if he decided to take that. But he handed over to an incredible player in Marmoush, who used to take the penalties for Eintracht Frankfurt. He's a great player. Why wouldn't you trust it? He kissed the ball and handed it over. And what I heard when I watched the match of the day, rerun of it the next day, the highlights of it, Henderson was interviewed and said, I think I would have, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically said, I would have struggled against Haaland because I wouldn't know which way he was going to go. As soon as he gave it to Marmoush, I knew exactly where he was putting it. I was always going to save it. Which at that point, my view of this guy was already, off the scale. When he said that, I was just like, I need to marry this guy. This guy's unbelievable. This guy is amazing. But then again, if I just played the game of my life in the FA Cup final, and I was, I played no small part in helping a team that hadn't ever won a major trophy win a trophy, I think I would allow myself a few outbursts like that.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, yeah. It was his cup final. It was Hendo's cup final. There is no two ways about it. And the fact that many people believe that he shouldn't have been on the pitch for 66 minutes, it just makes it even more of his. It wasn't Hendo, it was the ghost of Hendo on the pitch. Saving penalties. But that is football though, isn't it, Jan? And that Rib was talking about the magic of the cup, and usually it's about third round ties in tiny stadiums and big clubs going long there and having a tough time. But sometimes it can happen in the cup final too. Sometimes there can be a cup final that is memorable and has all the right ingredients and can be something that he's talked about for years. And this one was one of them. And it doesn't happen a lot these days.
Because what you want is drama, chaos, heroes, villains, contentious decisions. And this game had all of that, all of that. It was really incredible. As you said, the Henderson final, I think that's what it should be regarded as. Like, because you had the Matthews final, didn't you, back in the 50s? So this is the Henderson final.
Yeah. I think especially if you're neutral and the whole idea of him not being sent off has pissed you off somehow. I don't understand how. I mean, the City fans, yeah. I mean, like, if it was me, if it was my club, it was Arsenal who had lost a cup final like that, you would not hear the end of it from me. I would be going, dirty, cheating Palace bastards, I'd be saying. Yeah, same old Palace, I'd be saying. Because it's true. They've always been like this. They've always been like this. Always, always, always. And everyone would say, oh, yeah, you're just bitter. You're just a bitter Arsenal fan, aren't you? Well, that is true, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the two things can't coexist. That's what I'd say anyway. So what now for Palace? Now that they've won something, does it change their identity as a club? I mean, should they walk differently now?
Why, possibly. I've said this many a time, that the FA Cup matters. It should matter to any proper football fan. And Palace have got a major trophy there and thoroughly deserved it. But, you know, Palace have been in the Premier League for a long time now, haven't they?
Yeah.
But in my mind, and I was listening to something this morning and somebody said, in my mind, Palace is still a yo-yo club, even though they haven't yo'd or even yo'd in many a year. But this is going to allow them to crack on, I think. It's going to mean that they should be able to attract better players for their coming European campaigns. So I think Palace can really crack on from here, and I hope they do, because we said before, haven't we, about how boring Premier League seasons can be. This season's been a little bit less boring because of the teams that are in and around Europe. So having Palace in a major European tournament is a good thing, and it's a good thing for the club, and it freshens up these tournaments as well. So hopefully we'll see Palace with a top 10 finish next season, and obviously retaining the FA Cup, which would be boring, and I'm against that. But because then they just become like everybody else, don't they?
Yeah, well, of course, they've got someone who has won the Europa League as well as their manager. So Oliver Glasner took Eintracht Frankfurt all the way in that competition back in 2022. So he's got form, and followed that up with the German Cup. So he likes a bit of knockout football, does Oli Glasner. So, yeah, who is to say that there isn't more to come from this Palace side? And they are frighteningly talented as well. They've got some really, really good players. So it really just depends if they hold on to them. I know a lot of the talk around this season, especially with how well Michael Olise's done out playing for Bayern, is Eze going to go and join him? Are people going to come in for all their other players? Munoz showed exactly the sort of player he was. Adam Wharton has been brilliant as well. And JP Benteta is still getting the goals. These are really good players and players that will have a target on them now. These are players that people will be looking at and thinking, well, actually, you know, I quite like players that can do it on the big occasions, so maybe we'll get him. Hendo, how much is Hendo going to be worth in the summer?
He's priceless.
Yeah.
He's priceless now, isn't he?
Yeah.
He really is.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, how many Man U fans were looking at it and going, why didn't we ever sign a player like this?
Like I said, I think that attracting players because you are a substantial side, you're a winning side, is one thing. But I think it works as well with the players that you've got. You kind of go, well, look, we want something here. Can we crack on? Can we do something else here? Rather than going and sitting on the bench at Manchester City.
Yeah.
Or joining a bin fire like Spurs or Man United.
Yeah.
You know, so the only other options for them is to, well, you can go to Chelsea and get rotated around. if you want, or go abroad. You know, but if they can hold that side together and maybe add in a few other really talented individuals, I think Palace can really do something next season.
I think it's easy for people to say, well, club the size of Palace, they can't really afford to take the Europa League seriously because although they've been in the Premier League for a long time, it's quite fragile. Look how West Ham have got on this season. They've really struggled this season. And you just think, well, yeah, fine, but West Ham did actually win a trophy in Europe. So you can do it and you can stay up there. And all right, maybe you're not going to be competing for trophies while you're in a European competition. But I think this is their first ever qualification for Europe. And this is probably one thing that's excited the Palace fans I know, perhaps more than actually winning the cup, is the thought of being in Europe next season. And I think with Glasner in charge, I think they're definitely going to give it a go. Yeah, so really, at the end of the day, a great cup final. One of the great cup finals. And that's not just because one of our number, it was his team that was in it. It was just the fact that he had all the ingredients. He had all the chaos and just was a bit mad. I think that's probably the best way to describe it. It just summed up football, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to have a game like that in the cup final just to remind you that it can be really, really spectacular. And you know, that's what we all hope for, really.
Yeah, we do.
Especially if you're neutral. You just want to be entertained, and we were definitely entertained on Saturday.
Yeah, well, with any luck, this Saturday coming, we can go through it all again. And we can see another load of chaos and another load of mad things happening and people not being sent off when they should be, just to keep the old shits and giggles going. That's exactly what we want, isn't it, Jan, for this Saturday?
No. That's not what we want, Graham. That's not what we want. What we want is a straightforward 3-0 win for Sunderland it's all wrapped up in the first 20 minutes and they just pass the ball around for the rest of the game. That's what everyone wants. That's what everyone's paying to see.
I don't think we want a boring championship playoff final like that. I mean, oh dear, come on. Where's the passion? Where's the romance? Where's the magic of the championship playoff final? Is that a thing?
Well, when you're invested in it, it's a different... I don't know whether it's a thing. I mean, they are known for being spectacular occasions, aren't they? Games, I should say, because there's so much at stake and there's a lot at stake. There is going up to the Premier League and getting spanked by Wolves and Palace every week. That's what awaits the winner. Absolute annihilation by mid-table clubs in the Premier League next season. You know, we can all buy into that, can't we?
Well, I'm sure we can. So how do you think it's better to get to the final? Do you think it's better to just have two processions, two 3-0 wins in your semi-final? Or do you think it's better to get there in the 122nd minute just to scrape in there? Who do you think is arriving at Wembley in a better mental state, do you think?
Well, certainly not me after watching the game. I mean, now it's done. I would definitely say that the way that Sunderland qualified for it is the one you'd want to happen.
Well, that was,
just because I'm now looking back on it and forgetting the game before, which was fine. and the 121 minutes before Dan Ballard folded himself in two to score the most awkward header. He could have kicked it or he could have headed it, which is a strange thing.
It was mad. Listeners, if you haven't seen his goal, he does a sort of impression of a deck chair.
Yeah.
He basically just collapses and then suddenly he's scored a goal.
Yes, it was really awkward looking, but I'm sure he didn't care. And no one cared at that moment. The game itself, I mean, I've said on the pod that I really don't want to get promoted, but obviously now we're on the verge of it. Yeah, obviously, that is all gone. And we just want to win at Wembley and get promoted. And I'll worry about the fact we're going to get spanked every game next season, you know, once the final's out of the way. But I think that because there was so much tension leading up to that final corner, as we saw once play restarted after the goal, there was literally seconds left.
Mm.
So it really was the last kick of the game. Lafie, who came to us from Roma, who started really well, got injured, and then he came back and really wasn't doing as well as he could do, and we know he can do in this game, suddenly pulls out this perfect corner, sticks it right on Ballard's somewhere on his body, but Ballard sticks his head on it. And the roof came. I mean, you could feel it. You watched it as well, Graham.
Yeah, you could feel it
coming through the telly. I mean, the roof came off that stadium. And I have to say, I don't think the Stadium of Light has witnessed a moment like that in its history. I mean, its history is not very long. It's only built in the late 90s. But that was quite a moment. It really was. And for the tension just to break like that. And, you know, there were 46,000 fans there.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, a few thousand of them were Coventry fans, but to see the remainder just see a stadium erupt like that, which it did, was spectacular. Labrice was just walking around his technical area just going, I don't know what just happened. I mean, any of them, you'd assume that any other manager would be, you know, knee sliding or running to celebrate with his players. But I think, you know, he was just as shocked as everybody else. So yeah, it was a wonderful way to end it. But it does not do my heart any good. It really did not. So you know, Sunderland go into the game on Saturday with that kind of momentum behind them. Yes, Sheffield United put in two really great performances, identical 3-0 wins, and they go through unfluttered and unfazed. Sunderland go there on the back of this just madness and the belief that they've got that they can do it. They can do it even if it takes it to the last second of the game.
Mm.
So I think that Sunderland have got a decent chance.
I was watching that game, and for large sections, Coventry were in control, in a sort of control. They knew that Sunderland could hit them on the counter, frequently did. There was moments in extra time when they were both playing low blocks and just trying to hit the counter that wasn't available.
Mm.
It really was made for a set piece. Perfect drama, and it was. It really was. I don't know who's going to win that final. It could be a classic, or it could be another grind, because there is so much at stake. This is what playoff finals can be like now, because the numbers, or, I don't know, £250 million game, or whatever they call it now. That's so much pressure on clubs who are, when they go into that game, still in the Championship. That sort of pressure. Two teams that do not have good records, though, in Championship playoff finals.
No.
And they can't both lose, can they? We've said this. They cannot both lose. Something's got to give. Someone's got to win a Championship playoff final for the first time, haven't they?
I was at the one at the old Wembley when we lost to Charlton in that absolute mad game.
Yeah.
You know, if we go through that and win, then I'm all for it. But if we go through that and lose, I'm not for it. I'd rather get beat 3-0 and go home at the end of it. So, I mean, it would be good. Sheffield United were a little bit unlucky towards the end. I think, you know, they could have gone up automatically, and they're a great side, and he's a great coach. We're up against someone who will know what he's doing. But Sunderland get a chance to go up. It would be a great achievement for the new ownership that came in after, you know, we went down to the third tier and we had ownership, which was a bit crazy. And now we've got this incarnation who just feel like they've got a bit of a plan. It's great to see young players being given the opportunity. And hopefully that's something that we can take forward to the highest level and get smashed every week. But if we don't get promoted, joking aside, people like Bellingham, people like Chris Rigg will, I would imagine, they'll go because they're sought after and they'll want to play at a higher level. Now, the you know, Chris Rigg is, he's only a few months older than my son. He's got like 50 games for Sunderland already.
Yeah.
So he's ready to go and give it a go somewhere. And would he want another season in the Championship? Well, if they can persuade him, and maybe we can go and, you know, try and win it next season. But there's a risk that that team could fall apart and we'll have to rebuild again. But, you know, let's just see what happens. I mean, in my head, I think that United are a better team. You just look at where they've finished, look at how good they are. But we've had a couple of good games against them. And, you know, as we saw this Saturday, on the day, it just matters who really wants it more. And you've got to have a little bit of luck behind you and sometimes a bit of VAR blessing. And apparently VAR is being used in this game as well.
Well, of course it
strangely.
Is. Strangely. Strangely, yeah. The first time it rears its head in the EFL is the most important game. Yeah, well, fine.
Yeah.
Fine. Okay, use it here. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. We've discussed this a lot about the feelings about going up and getting battered every week, but I wonder, because we've had two seasons now where the three teams that have gone up have gone straight back down, there is a feeling that it's now harder than ever. Something has changed and the whole system of promotion and relegation between the Premier League and the Championship is somehow broken. But we've had moments like this before in the past where everyone who went up has come back down again. And we've also had it where all the teams that have gone up have stayed up as well. So just because the three teams were hopeless this season doesn't mean the three teams that are coming up next season are going to be as hopeless. Because, frankly, they really did honk, didn't they, this season?
They stunk the place out, Graham. They really did. Well, just speaking about Sunderland, I mean, finishing fourth in the Championship and then going into the Premier League and playing a team like Crystal Palace, you know, without, you know, huge changes or something changing with the existing players, Palace would destroy Sunderland. Mm. I really think they would. Of course, it's completely possible to stay up. I just think that, I mean, we talked about this a few weeks ago, didn't we? It's not just the guys that are in the top six, seven places. It's the guys that are sitting behind them, that rump of really good mid-table sides, like Crystal Palace, like Fulham, like Brentford, who will do a lot of damage to you because they've got just so many good players. And I think that is the difference. That's changed relatively recently, I think.
Mm.
So that's why I don't hold out much hope for either side when one of them does ultimately get promoted. Just on that, you know, Leeds and Burnley both went up in stellar fashion.
Mm.
Burnley's amazing defensive record. I mean, it's unlikely that's going to stand up to the Premier League. You know, they conceded 16 goals.
Yeah.
You know, you could see that in the first month of the Premier League season. No disrespect to Burnley, but it's quite literally a different league.
Yeah. Well, when he came up with Bournemouth, didn't he concede 14 goals in four games, I think? Yeah. Oh, hopefully that doesn't happen. But yeah, I think you're right. I think he could end up conceding 16 goals before the September international break, which would be awful, but these are the sort of nightmare scenarios that you suddenly think about, because this is the sort of narrative flow of where the Premier League is going. And yet, as we said before, that middle class of teams there at the moment that are still have an outside chance of grabbing a Europa Conference League place. Have you seen this, Jan? There is a way that the team that finishes eighth can snatch the Conference League place, but it does require a couple of things to happen.
Go on.
Well, mainly it needs Chelsea to win the Conference League, which is on the Wednesday after the playoff finals. Just a few days before the Champions League final, you've got the Conference League final. And if they win that, if they beat Betis, then they get a Europa League place. Now, if they finish seventh, that is currently the Conference League place, a little bit confusing because this extra place that we get is actually added after everything gets all like pushed around and everything. So the upshot of it is that the Conference League spot goes down to eighth place. But it only happens if Chelsea finish seventh, I think. That's how it seems to be anyway. And so that's what Fulham, Brentford, Bournemouth, all those sides will be going into the last day of the season. And it can happen. It's so close at the moment for those last Champions League spots. As it stands, Man City have a game in hand, so they could pull away. But you've got five clubs that are separated by just 1 point. And Forest play Chelsea on the last weekend of the season. So if they win that, they'll go above Chelsea. And Chelsea could definitely finish in seventh and can definitely go on to win that. So keep a little bit of hope there, Fulham fans, Brighton fans. I think Brighton are probably the favourites to get it because they've got an extra game. So that's how it could happen. There is still something to play for in the Premier League, Jan.
Which is great. However unlikely that seems, well, or not. But yeah, that does give it a bit of interest. And it is interesting that you've got, you know, all those teams separated just by 1 point. Yeah. It's very championship, isn't it?
It is.
It's good because it can be pedestrian and boring, and it's nice to have it freshened up with some different names as well.
Yeah. My personal scenario of choice for after the final day is Chelsea to finish in seventh place and for Fulham to finish in eighth place. So all those Fulham fans have to watch the Conference League final cheering on Chelsea, which will be hilarious. Aid, I'm sure you'll love that.
That would be a joy. Yeah. That would be a joy.
All round Aid's house for that one, I think.
I think we'll all round there. We'll invite Archie as well. So.
Well, yes, as I said last week was the last of the weekend box set. We put the weekend box set to bed for the summer. So it's up to you. You'll have to find all the games. But they're all big games now, aren't they? Yeah, they're all massive games. So you don't need any encouragement from us to watch the playoff finals. That League One playoff final between Orient and Charlton, that's going to be a cracker.
Yeah. And I was at the League One playoff final a few seasons ago, and that was a cracker. It's great. The playoffs is the best thing that we ever came up with for football in this country, apart from football itself.
Some people find it a bit weird because it's like the big Wembley occasion that comes after the FA Cup final, and it sort of dilutes the being at Wembley thing. But I think it is truly brilliant, the playoffs. And the fact that you get all three divisions there playing over the weekend. I know a couple of years ago it was sort of split up, but being back in the bank holiday weekend, three games in 3 days, you can't beat it for my money.
Mm. Yeah, it's great.
We can't go without mentioning the fact that Brian Glanville sadly passed away last week. And I know for me, as a part-time football writer for a few years, he was a great influence. And there are books on my shelves written by him that go back years. I've got books from the 50s that he contributed to. This is the guy who wrote Cliff Baston's memoirs in 1950, 75 years ago. And he just passed away last week. The breadth of his career is just astounding. If you can find any of his writing, hunt it down because it is great. Someone who I know a lot of football writers who really looked up to. And yes, will be sadly missed. Yes, Brian Glanville. We'll be back next week for our last episode of the season. And Terry will be here too. And then he can put us right on all the things that we got wrong about the Palace game. I can't wait for that. Can you, Jan?
Yeah, I'll be schooled in everything I got wrong, which is considerable.
But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Thank
potentially Arsenal.
Maybe some Arsenal. I'm just conscious that I don't give good Arsenal. When punters are listening to people talking about banter clubs, they really want the Goldbridge stuff, really, and the Arsenal fan TV, and I really just don't come up with that sort of stuff.
Graham Sibley, broadsheet Arsenal TV.